It's Saturday Night
Five.
Saturday night.
Get ready for the Saturday night.
Louder.
Saturday night's all right.
On Saturday night.
Okay, we are live. Welcome to Dynasty Saturday Night 5 once again on your Saturday night. Please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. Going for two live podcast feed. If you're here watching us on the YouTube channel, please make sure that you subscribe, like the video, leave some comments. Help us game that algorithm. It'll be doing us a solid. I'm Brian Ford here with my co-host Josh Walker, back on duty after serving beer to spring breakers and doing some traveling. How you doing?
Doing great. I got to go to the Braves game last weekend, so that was good, as amongst many other things I had to do on Saturday. So that's fun. Yeah, I'm really happy to be back and hopefully to be here for a good stretch of episodes as we finish up rookie mock drafts.
Yeah, we missed you. We missed you. And we have our second ever guest tonight from the venerable football guy's umbrella, Zada Katsabadian. Welcome.
Second ever. I didn't know that. Thank you for having me. This is quite the honorary guest spot, I guess. So thank you very much. I'm happy to be here and talk about football as always.
Yes, you're going in the storied annals of Dynasty Saturday Night 5. I don't know what you're doing here, slumming with us, but here we are on a Saturday night.
Well, really, we just didn't want to put a ton of pressure on you letting you know that. So, this is a big deal.
So, Zada, why don't you tell the people where they can find you and your work and all the plugs that you need to get out there?
Yeah, so I'm just primarily at one place as far as fantasy football goes. I'm at footballguys.com. I am a dynasty contributor over there. Joe reached out to me like about a year ago, pretty much to the day, and asked me if I wanted to come do dynasty. And I hope he's not watching, but when he asked me, he's like, "You want to do dynasty?" And I wasn't even like dynasty savvy, and I'm like light years ahead from where I was. I was like, "Yeah, sure. Yeah, fine. I'll do it. Yeah, like I'll come on and do it." So here I am now as a dynasty contributor. I had no idea what I was doing as a dynasty guy. I knew like this much about dynasty, but I'm there now. I know a lot more. I'm building profiles. I know how to, I'm way better. So if you need advice, feel free to come and reach out to me. And I'm also on Twitter at the handle that you see below my face, ZCantsFF.
All right. Thanks so much. We really appreciate you being here. So for those of you who don't remember, or it's your first time watching Dynasty Saturday Night 5, we do lists of five as just a fun vehicle, as a way into the Dynasty topic that we want to talk about tonight, because it's Saturday night. So why not have fun? Speaking of fun, you can be the winner of our logo design contest and design our new logo if you send a 16:9 ratio JPEG to my DMs at FFJunkie_ on Twitter. And we've extended the deadline. We'll be announcing a winner sometime in the summer this offseason. Please make sure that you note that and send over the DM of your graphic skills that that Josh and I sure don't have. That's for sure. So tonight we're going to talk about veteran winners and losers post NFL draft. So a lot of folks were watching the NFL draft, and whether it was a quarterback who got weapons or didn't, or whether it was a running back who got competition or didn't, or whatever the case may be, there was, impact on the veterans, not just on our rookie analysis. So before we get kicking off with the list, I'll start with Josh. When it comes to like identifying winners and losers for this episode, how did you do it?
I tried to keep it simple, and basically for the losers, I looked at some guys who might be aging, their late 20s, maybe on the tail end of their careers, and they drafted someone younger and most of the time better. In both my examples, at least, they're younger and better than them already, at least in my opinion, before they've even played. As far as winners go, it's just people that you hoped would keep their job, and it looks like the team has faith in them by not going out and drafting that position. Like quarterback, not going out and getting a young quarterback that they might build for 2 or 3 years and replace them, or vice versa. So I kept it pretty simple with how I picked mine, but that's how I went about it.
Zada, how did you think about this exercise?
I just basically I just classify it as somebody who dropped a tier or raised a tier. That's about it. As far as like, you know, a wide receiver two that jumps from wide receiver one, or an RB three on a depth chart that goes to RB two, or yeah, or if they're like being threatened for their RB two position, they haven't, you know, officially lost their RB two title, but if they're going to be threatened for it, and the likelihood is that they lose it. So some of that, if they're being threatened or if they've clearly lost their status.
So I know we've talked a lot on this show and all over about the sort of shifting of the dynasty running back landscape. Was there any particular position that either of you saw when you were watching the draft or thinking about this this episode that you thought got impacted more or less than another?
I think it was running back, just because you can have three wide receivers that are fantasy useful on one team. Running backs is harder to do that. You can maybe have two, but you got to run a lot. And you, in a committee, if both are going to be successful, they both have to get a lot of carries. And I think that's less likely to happen on most teams. And someone coming in as a wide receiver three, like Zay Flowers maybe, or someone like that, who can come in and already impact the game. Quentin Johnson, he's going to be the wide receiver three, but that still has value on certain offenses. So I think it's the running back, just because there's not as big of a room there.
Do you agree, Z?
Yeah, I think I agree with Josh, because these first round wide receivers that got drafted, they don't profile as wide receiver ones for an NFL team. They're more complementary wide receivers that play, you know, as a flanker or a slot receiver. So there is no real threat. There are wide receivers, I think, like day three wide receivers or day two wide receivers, like Cedric Tillman, you know, who profiles as somebody who could start. Marvin Mims as somebody that could start in a new with a new coaching change. I like that. Yeah, with Marvin Mims. with Sean Payton, you know, there are guys that could push that got drafted onto teams with new coaches, but there aren't really. I don't think there's any teams that got. Yeah, there isn't much shakeup at any of the positions, but I would have to agree. Running back, yeah, definitely with Charbonnet going with Kenneth Walker. Even like later picks, like I mean. Chris Rodriguez going to the to Washington, like in the seventh or sixth round. Zach Evans going to the LA Rams. Yeah, I mean, there were a few other ones, I'm sure. Like, I can't name off the top of my head, but definitely the running back position became a little bit more obscure.
Have either of you done anything with this information as far as, like, trades out in the dynasty streets, as far as these shifting veteran values and trying to get ahead of things?
I haven't really made any big trades for any rookies just yet. I mean, as far as draft picks goes and rookie drafts, I have kind of structured my drafts where I am going for day two wide receivers, day one wide receivers in the first two rounds of my drafts. And then I'm going for running backs in day three, round three, round four. So that's kind of, I'm like wide receivers and that's pretty much it. And like the top two or three tight ends in the first two rounds. And in the later second half of the draft, I'm going all running backs. I'm attacking running backs that got drafted around five, round six, round seven. And I'm just taking darts at all these guys I like, and I'm sticking them on taxi squads. And that's how I'm approaching the running back position. So that's what I'm doing rookies this year.
Josh, any trades based on veteran impacts?
No, not trades. It's more realizations. Guys like in teams where I have like Kamara, Joe Mixon, some of these other guys, I kind of just realized I'm kind of just stuck with them for now until they show that they can be fantasy relevant again. I think things I was wanting to do, I'm just going to kind of have to wait. So I'm just waiting it easy. I'm trying to get my rookie drafts done, but it did shift how I drafted. I thought I'd be taking a running back almost every single draft second round. That's not the case. Just like he said, I've been taking running backs third and fourth round. Zach Evans is some Tank Bigsby's that fall late, taking shots on them and getting either Laporta or Jaden Reed, guys like that in the round, and getting like Zay Flowers, JSN, and Gibbs in the first. So it has shifted than what I thought it would be.
I just drafted Jaden Reed like 20 minutes before I hopped on with you guys. I was at the 307, and then another guy had 304, I think, and I gave him my 307 and the next year third for Jaden Reed, because, you know, he got that draft capital and the college production, and just his collegiate profile, right? I mean, like, the guy as a third round pick. You can have my next year's third round pick and this year's third round pick. I want him. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely agree.
There are guys that are definitely slipping too low. He's probably one of them. As far as a survivor that we're not going to talk about tonight, There's renewed interest in the couple Dameon Pierce shares that I still have. So I'm thinking, you know, because he survived the draft, so to speak, except for, you know, UDFA's Xavien Valade, you know, who's more competition for Singletary than he is for anybody else. So, he's probably someone that I'll be able to get a little bit more for than I, like, because like before, people were like, didn't want to touch him with a 10-foot pole. So before we get started with our list of five, time to pay the bills. Just to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. They are, of course, the industry leader. Best ball leagues, tournaments, private leagues, pick'ems. They're not just football. They are, of course, every major sport. Although there's a whole lot of football, best ball drafting going on right now. Big, huge contest. I think there's one with like $15 million in it or something like that. And you can take advantage of both your loyalty to going for two and your loyalty to Underdog by going to underdog.com or the Underdog app and using the promo code GF2, and that'll get you a deposit match on any new account deposit of up to $100. And for those of you who are watching, we're fancy and we have a little QR code there for you on the screen that you can scan, and that'll take you right to Underdog where you can use the promo code GF2. And start playing and perhaps even start winning. All right, so time to get to our lists of five. And so what we decided to do tonight was, much to everyone's delight, I'm going to shut up a little bit. And I'm going to let the guest and my co-host, Josh, who hasn't been here for a couple weeks, do the lists. And I'm just going to do, hopefully, a lot of listening. We'll go back and forth, you know, between the two of you. Guest gets to go first. Z, you're up. Who do you want to talk about first?
I'm muted. Okay. My first guy is tight end, Tennessee Titans tight end, Chigozie Okonkwo. I just traded for him today, talking about another thing I did that everybody else so desperately wanted to know about. I traded Darren Waller straight up for Chig Okonkwo like an hour ago. I just did that. So I'm high on him. I love him coming out of Maryland. I love him. I loved him as a prospect. I like his athleticism. I think he's got a lot of room to grow. And in this year, around my entire argument, it's that he's the tight end one now. Austin Hooper is gone, right? And we saw Chig, I'm just going to call him Chig. We saw him start to build momentum weeks 10 through 15 of the 2022 season. Ryan Tannehill was targeting him. Ryan Tannehill got injured in week 15 or 16 and the train stopped and it just all went downhill. I think Chig was going to be kind of like a late round or a late season, like a season saver at the tight end position, because tight end position is just really difficult every single year. So I'll just throw some stats at you guys. Chig's average snap share was about 41% weeks 10 through 15, 46%. I'm sorry. It was only 46%, right? During that time, he was averaging 4 targets per week and a 14% target share between that time span, right? But here are some really cool efficiency stats from Chig, right? In yards per route run, he was number one among tight ends. In yards per target, he was number two. In yards per reception, he was number one. In fantasy points per route run, he was number one. So that's a lot of number ones and twos, right? Mm-hmm. So these are really good utilization metrics that show how efficient he was with the limited opportunity that he got on a 46% snap share with 4 targets per game, right? So like this guy, like he's going to make a lot of things happen. It just says that this guy has a lot of upside as probably like the 1B in an office next in an offense, you know, pending Kyle Phillips doing anything. I would love that too. But like, you know, it's Burks and Chig, right? Austin Hooper is gone. Chig was on the field for 88% of pass plays in 2022, right? And that's right there with Kyle Pitts, George Kittle, and Pat Freiermuth, right? So I think it's really wheels up when you look at how he's being utilized as a receiving tight end. They'll probably have a blocking tight end in there somewhere unless he learns how to do that better. But I think Chig, you know, based on his efficiency metrics, based on what we've seen, I think, you know, if you can go acquire him right now, and if people aren't really savvy to what I just spoke about, I think you should go get him and you're going to really feel good about it. I think he's about 23 or 24 years old right now. So you're going to have a nice little future with Chig.
Our friend Zach here checking in the chat agrees with you. got a lot of Chig. I have a pretty good amount of shares too. Josh, what do you think about Chig?
No, I love Chig. He saved a few of my leagues that I won last year by picking him up, because I usually wait a little bit on tight end if I can't get Kelsey or Andrews. So I waited, and most times it worked out when I had Njoku, but otherwise I picked up Chig in those other leagues, and he did really well until, as he said, they just kind of fell off. Mm-hmm. He's big, and even with Hooper there, I remember seeing a headline that the coaches were actually drawing up plays to get him the ball. So even while he was kind of a work in progress, he was still one of the major parts of that offense, and I think that's just going to grow this year.
So, question. So
I love it. And actually, I'm about to go try and move my Darren Waller for a Chig in my Devy League. Once you said that, I didn't even think about that.
That's one of the trades that I found for Chig when I was doing some notes for the episode was straight up for Dulcich. And I was like, that seems wow. You know, but we're saying even Waller now too. Wow. Z's putting his money where his mouth is. Are you concerned at all that even with the increased volume on a bad offense that runs a lot, that it's just not going to be enough for him? Like, don't get me wrong, I love the player, I know all the efficiency, like I have a bunch of shares. My one concern is that team may be a dumpster fire. Will Levis starting by you know week six, and they're running the ball 35 times a game.
I'm not worried if it's Will Levis, as long as it's not Josh Dobbs or Malik Willis. I mean, yeah. Like Will Levis can still deliver the ball. I don't like Will Levis very much. He's kind of a gross quarterback, but he can distribute the ball efficiently. He's got a good arm on him. And I'm really baking in Chig's athleticism into his appeal, right? His efficiency metrics speak to his athleticism. He's just a natural catcher of the ball, receiver, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, yep. We saw, like, you know, when you watch him catch plays out of the backfield as an H-back at the goal line, like they use him. They use him as they get him open. They want to get him open in Tennessee. So I'm not really worried about pass volume, primarily because it's just him and Burks. Mm-hmm. They're not going to pass to Derrick Henry. We'll see what happens to Tajay Spears, you know. But, I mean, like, I'm not going to really overthink this. I'm just going to go with what I'm seeing and the metrics are telling me. And I'm going to just kind of – I'm going to have some kind of conviction in myself and go with Chig on this.
Right on. Josh, yeah. Who's your first guy on your list?
I'm going to go and knock my one quarterback I have. And it's someone who I've been drafting a lot in the last few startups I've been doing based on where I can get him. It's Geno Smith. They signed him to a 3-year deal. I mean, they didn't, and Drew Locke's his only competition right now. So I don't see him losing his job unless he just falls off the table, because he was really good last year. I think people are just calling it a flash in the pan, but he was one of the most accurate quarterbacks. He had one of the best decision makings. And he's got now three stud wide receivers to throw to. And he's got two good running backs. They drafted a few offensive linemen in the fourth and fifth round. They got one of the better 1-2 punches as far as young running backs go. So, I mean, where you can get him, I'm drafting a lot of Geno Smith right now, knowing I can get at least 3 years out of him on a good team, or at least a good offense. I don't know about the team, but at least on a good offense for fantasy.
Yeah, you know, with Geno, it's interesting. I think in startups, I try to grab like two of like the top 10 to 12, 14 quarterbacks. Otherwise, if I can't, like, I'll get my second one a little later. And Geno wound up being a lot. But when I look at like second half of the season, Geno, I get a little worried. Like, I also get a little worried, like, was he a 1-year wonder, right? Like, the Jets destroyed him. And now, like, he's getting this 1 year, like, late in his career. I mean, obviously a winner, as you say, right? They didn't draft Richardson. They didn't draft Hooker, right? Like, Adam JSN and Charb and improved the defense and offensive line. Are you worried at all, like, that maybe we're putting a lot of faith in that 1 year that he had late in his career?
In real life, yeah. In fantasy, not so much. Just where I'm getting like 8th, 9th round sometimes, almost 10th round at times in startups for Superflex. So where I'm getting him there, I try and at that point get another quarterback in the 12th or 13th, like a Mac Jones, a Desmond Ritter. So if it doesn't happen, I try and get a backup that is still starting just in case. But I'm not as worried about it for fantasy, the fact that he has three really good wide receivers to throw the ball to.
Yeah. Zada, what do you think?
I think Josh is on the right. You know, he's on the right train of mind. I think this is kind of comes back to, like, let's not overthink it. Like, he's got JSN, mm-hmm. Tyler Lockett, and DK Metcalf. I'm not really going to overthink that with that with those weapons. Mm-hmm. I don't think Zach Charbonnet is going to, you know, really reduce the pass rate. I think Zach Charbonnet, I honestly think, like, I like Charbonnet a lot. And, you know, I don't mean to go off on a side tangent. Interesting fact about Zach Charbonnet. Zach Charbonnet is the earliest running back drafted at UCLA since Maurice Jones-Drew in 2006. Mm. And Zach Charbonnet even has even earlier draft capital than Maurice Jones-Drew does, right? And there's, I think, running backs to come out of there were Paul Perkins, you know, Joshua Kelly, and a few other guys. And none of them did anything. So Zach Charbonnet is another UCLA experiment. So we'll see what happens with him. We'll see what happens to Zach Charbonnet. Kenneth Walker, you know, in college, he had a missed forced tackles rate at 30%, which is astronomical rate. I still like Kenneth Walker a lot. I loved him as a prospect. I know there's been a lot of pooping on him and dumping on him recently. But anyways, going back to Geno Smith. I'm so sorry. I go on tangents. Going back to Geno Smith. I just traded for Geno Smith in a Devy league as a QB2. I traded for him with Calvin Ridley, and I gave John Mechie and Calvin Ridley. So I gave John Mechie, who I like, but I just don't know what's going to happen with him. And his profile wasn't too promising for me. His rookie profile wasn't too promising for me. He kind of profiled as like a career wide receiver too. Mm-hmm. But in Calvin Ridley, who I think I overpaid on the trade a little bit. Calvin Ridley is kind of like 27, 20 years old right now. And I just wanted to kind of offload him for some value. And Geno Smith seemed like the perfect guy to do it with in a very renewed, very good looking offense heading into the 2023 season.
Whether it's based on rankings, calculators, and real life trades that I've found, he's being valued roughly between the 110 and the 202. Like, I'll give you the 202 for a starting quarterback in a super flex, you know, like, you know what I mean? But as far as his ADP goes in a startup, toward the end of the seventh round, after Jordan Love.
Like, I don't understand that.
No.
I don't. What if you could rationalize that, what would be the logic being? And you said, in what drafts are these?
It's a startup ADP. So this is a website, Bulletproof, that has a rolling ADP update that they pull from sleeper startups, right? The DLF ADP is quarterback 24 between Pickett and Levis, and the Bulletproof ADP is quarterback 23 between Love and Carr.
I think this is just kind of like a case of ageism. That's all it is. They're just like, we want the younger quarterback.
I'm not that worried about him falling off a cliff, because I wrote an article about him back in week six. And at that time, he was first in rating by a good bit, fourth in QBR, and he is on target percentage and bad throw percentage were all low. Mm-hmm. And I don't think those are like luck stats where he's just getting lucky out there, like making bad throws, but getting lucky with it. I think he's actually making good decisions and good throws. So. Yeah.
But I have to get mad at Zada here for a second for besmirching the good name of my childhood running back, Freeman McNeil of the New York Jets, also a UCLA product. And
dude, who?
You forgot. Freeman McNeil, number 24, New York Jets, 1980s. Like, come on. Like,
this is me when I go on baseball rants.
What did I even like hinted towards McNeil. What did I say?
No, I'm saying you left him out of the long legacy of good UCLA running backs. Freeman McNeil.
I'm getting back to 2006. I have no idea. Dude, wow. That's a little nugget right there, Brian.
Yeah,
that's a nugget.
Yeah. I grew up when I was a kid. I was a Jets fan. And so, yeah, that's like my era. That's the 80s. All right, I guess Zada, you're next. Who's next on your list that you want to talk about?
Next on my list is Pierre Strong, and it's kind of like Chig. I'm like hot on. I'm like flaming hot on with Pierre Strong. I'm warm on, but he's a clear winner. You know, the Patriots. I don't know how they managed to. I bet they were like white knuckling it, not drafting a running back the entire NFL draft. They're like, please. Let me just draft one. They didn't draft a single running back. I was not seeing that coming.
Well, that's because Belichick's dog wasn't doing the buttons this time.
Right? Dude, that's funny. So Ramondre Stevenson saw a massive, sharp rise in value, as he should. I love Ramondre. But Pierre Strong, I mean, he's just this guy who has the profile of a satellite back. He has a BMI of 28.9. But, you know, as a collegiate rusher, He had three of four of his seasons, he rushed for over 1,000 yards and averaged over 7 yards per carry. Now, he was a small school running back. For anybody who comes at me for that, I understand it. But it shows his capability as a runner. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, last year, we were under the kind of like assumption, or it just kind of felt like that Pierre Strong was the preferred satellite running back. But I went and looked back at the numbers, and both Kevin Harris and Pierre Strong were both utilized at the same amount as receivers. It's just that Kevin Harris received no targets and Pierre Strong received like 7 targets in like 4 weeks towards the end of the season. But the thing is that, like, I think that Pierre Strong, like I said, he's going to be a satellite running back. He has a profile. He has the anatomy. He's far more athletic than Kevin Harris. Plus, I think, like, if anything, we can see Pierre Strong as like a Shane Vereen light version, mm-hmm. where Shane Vereen, over a 4-year span during like his peak production, he averaged 12 carries a game and 4 targets a game, right? And I think we could see something a little bit less of that. Also, I will also say that you need to stash Kevin Harris if you can. Kevin Harris, he had an unfortunate slew. I think he had a back injury and like a hamstring injury at South Carolina. I had him, if he wasn't injured, he would be my RB3 in last year's class behind Kenneth Walker. Like, really? I wasn't on the Isaiah Spiller train. Like, that was not me. I was a big fan of Kevin Harris. He, in his only healthy season in 2020, he ran for 1,138 yards on 168 attempts while averaging 6.2 yards per carry, right? He had a 20.5% missed tackle rate, right? So when we're talking about missed forced tackles, right, just so we have like preference, so we have like a bar to talk about, 20% is like the baseline for where you want that to be. Like, Jahmyr Gibbs was at 24 point and some change in his final year of college. Breece Hall was at 26% and Kenneth Walker was at 30%, right? So that just speaks to what they can do independent of their blocking scheme, what they can do as a runner and create yards on their own. So Kevin Harris, for somebody who wasn't super athletic, was creating yards on his own. So I think he would have, like I said, I think he would have been the RB3 behind Kenneth Walker. And I think if something does happen to Ramondre, that Kevin Harris will be the next guy up on early downs. He will be, I guess, the Damian Harris without the targets, without the receiving game.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's talking about like Ramondre as a survivor. Well, downstream from that means, you know, the other guys in the backfield are too. Josh, what do you think about Pierre Strong? He's a guy I didn't like too much coming out of college, but you know, what we hear is the team likes him and wants him to be the third down back. They do still like Ty Montgomery from what we hear as well. Are you interested at all in Strong as a sneaky, like, buy low or waiver pickup? Or?
Yeah, I am. And it's basically where I drafted him. I think him and Tristan Ebner are two of my most rostered running backs just because I've been getting them late. I didn't like some of the other names, and I saw the chance for playing time there. And I mean, I'm not going to add any context to this because it's not needed, but he averaged 10 yards a carry and had a touchdown every 10 carries. So, I mean, that's all you need to know about Pierre Strong. You don't need any other context of those stats. So, of it's course. Hard to say no to that.
Right. So,
no, I like him.
Zada, do you think he'll have the role? Like, do you think he'll be essentially the, for, you know, maybe not a straight comp, but like, you know, like the James White, you know, for the Pats this year, or is a guy like Ty Montgomery going to eat into that? And like Ramondre does catch passes, and you know, Kevin Harris is there more as like the two down guy, and Robinson's there to compete with the young guys. Like, are you worried at all? Like, as far as Strong's role, I know you said you're warm, you're not hot on him, so it's not like you're saying to the moon, but you know, do you have any concerns about like the size of the role?
Yeah, definitely. And I think Ramondre is still going to get his. I mean, the funny thing is that, so like, if you look at Bill O'Brien as the offensive coordinator for Alabama last year, like, Jahmyr Gibbs was the leading receiver for the team. Like, he didn't lead them in yards, but he led the team in receptions, right? And we saw what Ramondre Stevenson did last year without Bill O'Brien. And Bill O'Brien, you know, he's obviously going to scheme up his running back to be, you know, especially with those wide receivers with like Juju and Tyquan Thornton and Devontae Parker. Am I missing his NBA? Like
Keyshawn Boutte.
Kendrick Bourne. Like what? It's like Alabama all over again. Like it's probably worse than Alabama. Like, so I mean, Ramondre is still going to be the guy. Like, don't think I'm saying fade Ramondre in any kind of way. Absolutely not.
Right.
But I think, like, you know, we, as far as like the New England backfield and the nature of a running back by committee, what we've known, I'm not going to start the tradition of there being a, you know, saying that there's going to be a workhorse in that backfield.
Sure.
So Tad Montgomery, sure. I mean, he could eat into it a little bit. But the good thing about Pierre Strong is he doesn't cost you anything. You can get him for like a fourth round pick, and so, you might as well just drop that. Yeah.
Speaking to that, in DLF ADP, startup ADP, he's going as running back 81 between Chase Edmonds and Chris Evans.
Yeah, you're going to want Pierre Strong.
Right. That's why I've been drafting a lot of him, because the guys around him, I don't really see a path to playing time without three injuries happening. With him, you could see it happening with an injury to Montgomery. He could slide into that.
Earlier today, in the trade finder for DLF, somebody traded Algier straight up for him. Which is kind of interesting, right? Like, I mean,
I don't like that.
That's a little rich for me. Yeah,
that's a little overpaid. I think I would rather keep Algier, right?
Yeah. But the other trade I found the day before, 309. You're gonna throw the 309 out there for Strong, or you prefer a fourth?
I think it's a bit too much for Strong. Yeah. Just a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a little bit too much.
Yeah, there's still guys. Yeah, 309.
Their start throws in the late third. I'd rather take a shot on them.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some tight ends and maybe some wide receivers.
But fourth round, and when Sean Tucker's there, I'd rather have Pierre Strong. So
absolutely, yeah.
All right, Josh, who's your next winner or loser?
My next winner is one of my favorite running backs, and especially now, Tony Pollard. So basically, you got Zeke very unlikely to return. That's going to thrust Pollard into the lead role. His real only competition is Malik Davis and Ronald Jones. I do like Malik Davis a little bit, but Ronald Jones has been almost cut from every team he's been on, so I'm not really worried about him. So he's definitely going to get plenty of touches. He already finished RB8, and that was with Zeke eating into his touches and a lot of his red zone opportunities. And I mean, if he's healthy, I think he could be a top five fantasy running back in that offense, because Mike McCarthy doesn't seem to be in a hurry to throw the ball a ton. And Dak did throw a lot of interceptions, so yeah, I think Tony Pollard, where you're getting, he's a steal right now in startup drafts because he's got top five potential.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely when people talk about survived the draft, right? Pollard was one of those names. Z, what do you think about Pollard?
Man, yeah, absolutely. Pollard, I think, yeah, everybody wanted to see Pollard take the reins 2 years ago. We had to endure 2 years of mid to subpar Zeke. It was brutal to watch. It just didn't even like look good for the offense. The offense was all shiny and pretty. They had great weapons, and they gave the ball to Zeke, and you're like, oh, dude, no one wants to watch this. No one wants to see this. It's just a shame that it took, you know, Pollard's 26 years old. So, you know, it took this long. But, you know, Pollard was one of the most – I think he was one of the most efficient backs
with
the ball in his hand. He made it insane. He made so much out of his opportunities. I'm all aboard Pollard.
Josh, one of the things that we've talked about with Pollard is he can be a 1A, but with a certain amount of touches and a certain kind of touches – you know, like, I don't know that, you know, he's got that, you know, a lot of between the tackles type running to him. And Zeke was a really good pass blocker. If, for example, I don't know, like, are you worried about it at the workload? Are you worried about if the team brought in someone like Leonard Fournette?
Yeah, if the team brings in Leonard Fournette, maybe a little bit, but I'm still going to draft him where he's going. Because I think even with – I don't think he needs 15 to 20 touches a game to be really good at fantasy. We saw that with Zeke there. You know, he just needs 12 carries, a few goal line opportunities, and then to catch a good bit of passes. I think he's still got a chance to be top five. Even if, I mean, bringing in Fournette would definitely solidify to me that he's probably not going to get a ton of goal line carries, and you do have to bake that into your rankings and stuff. But for it would a little bit, but I'd still draft him where he's going.
Pollard or the 108?
I'll take Pollard.
Z, Pollard or the 108?
Yeah, give me Pollard. Yeah. Okay. Interesting fact about Pollard is that he is a lighter BMI than Jahmyr Gibbs, yet everybody's worried about Jahmyr Gibbs' BMI, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like you said, Brian, like he's got it. He's not a Zeke type running back. He's a different breed. Yeah.
Yeah. So seeing him go in eight in startups around Javonte, Ramondre, and Nick Chubb. I'd like Ramondre maybe a hair better, but I'll take him over the other guys.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how I have him as well.
Yeah. All right. Josh, last one. Pollard or Najee?
I'm going to go with Pollard just because I think Jalen Warren showed he's good. And I'm honestly afraid, and I thought about asking Jeff to write an article about this, how the Steelers just kind of ran Najee into the ground, and he doesn't look as quick, he doesn't look as athletic, and he's battling injuries now. So I kind of think they just ran him too much his rookie year. And I think the Falcons, just touching on a little side point, I think the Falcons should learn from that and not give Bijan Robinson a shitload of carries this year. Right. And just make sure you have him for 8 years. That health.
All right. So Zach's asking us in the chat here, would you go as high as 106? I mean, you're essentially saying like JSN or Pollard there, right?
And yeah. That's JSN or Pollard. Yeah.
I mean, at that point, like, I think I'm going, give me the pick. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm a JSN over Pollard.
Unless I'm stacked at running back and just need, or stacked at wide receiver and need a running back, I'll probably take the pick. But if I'm running back needy, I would take Pollard.
JSN, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say JSN. Let's. I don't want to make a mistake about it. I want to clarify that JSN is going to be he's going to have an amazing, amazing career. So yeah, I would definitely go JSN.
No. Who is your next guy on the winners and losers list?
It's not a sexy guy like Pollard. It's another backup running back. It's Keontae Ingram, Arizona Cardinals running back. And the argument is that he's a big running back behind James Conner. That's it.
You are speaking my love language when you bring up Keontae Ingram, by the way. I am embarrassed by the percentage of shares that I have of Keontae Ingram in my portfolio. What makes him the winner?
He's just – they didn't draft anybody. They didn't bring anybody in. They didn't draft anybody. They might do something in free agency. But, I mean, James Conner missed 4 games last year due to shin, knee, and rib strains, right? He's going to be 28 years – he's 28 and a half years old when the season starts, like 28 and a quarter. I think Keontae Ingram right now, he enters the realm of, like, what Alexander Mattison was last year or, like, Jalen Warren was last year. So you just kind of, like, stick him on your bench in a startup league, in a startup draft. You get him later. And you just put him over there with Jalen Warren. You put him over to Chuba Hubbard. You just stick him over there with those guys. You know, he's just a big guy who can run hard. He's a good pass catcher. Mm-hmm. He was productive his first 2 years at Texas. I think he produced more than Bijan or Roschon Johnson in 2019. He outproduced him, but then they brought in Bijan. He transferred to USC, put up like 950 yards at USC. He's a fine runner. He's a capable runner. Mm-hmm. He's the perfect complement and replacement to James Conner should James Conner get hurt. That's all it is.
I liked Ingram coming out of college. Well, not like to the moon, but like well-rounded skill set. I thought he could find a role. He did flash on it was like a primetime game. I think his rookie year where we saw him score I think one or two touchdowns and broke off a big run or something like that. I seem to be higher than the market on him, Josh. I have him as my RB56, whereas we see him at 76, 73, 72, 79, 66, below 86, not even on the list, and 76 in various rankings and ADPs that I pulled. Do you have any lean one way or the other on Ingram, especially given the low price?
Yeah, I think it's definitely – he's one of the better handcuffs, Like you said, James Conner has been hurt a lot. When he's in there, he's really good. I really like James Conner, but he is more than likely, if I was betting money, he's going to miss some games this year. I don't know how many, but that could just give Keontae Ingram the touches he needs to really prove that they can move on from James Conner and let him at least get a good share. I like him. I don't have a ton of shares, but I like him a lot. He's a really good handcuff.
Before the show, you and I were threatening Josh with going down a tangent about UDFA running backs. Amari DiMercato is a UDFA that the Arizona Cardinals signed out of TCU, 5'9", 215. Kind of like an Ingram in the sense that he's got third down potential, maybe not quite as big and powerful. Are we threatened by that UDFA running back when it comes to Ingram? Is he, he's a guy I've been trying to scoop up in like the fifth round or like after drafts.
I'm so sorry to say I have no familiarity with Amari's production. I don't know where he's from. I have no, I can't tell you if I'm threatened by him or not.
Okay.
I don't know. Amari DeMarcado, you said.
Yeah, I'll put it in the chat for folks who maybe want to Google him. Like, I mean, listen, he's just a fun UDFA running back that some of us are having some fun with, because listen, it's just James Conner and then not much else, even though, you know, I like Ingram. So he's a TCU. Yeah. He was what's his face is Kendre Miller's teammate, older prospect, like a 5-year prospect, but yeah.
So I'm realizing now why I didn't draft Keontae Ingram was because they had Darrell Williams, and Darrell Williams won me some leagues with the Chiefs when he caught a bunch of passes and looked like a wide receiver out there. So I think I was buying late Darrell Williams more so, but yeah, he's not there. So
Josh, who's your next guy on the list, winner or loser?
Yeah, I'm going to just do my last winner and then get to the losers later. Yeah, it's Irv Smith, someone I've liked for a few years. He's just never really gotten the opportunity. Cincinnati didn't draft a tight end, showing that he's going to be the guy. He's still 24, so he still should have plenty of dynasty value. And last year, the Bengals actually made Hayden Hurst look a lot better than I think he actually is. And Joe Burrow showed that he likes to throw to the tight end. I think a lot of that has to do with Ja'Marr Chase and Higgins leaving the middle of the field open, hence why Tyler Boyd gets a lot of receptions. But I think not drafting anyone, they showed that they're ready to make him be the guy. And I don't think that's shown yet in ADP and in startup drafts. And given his age, I think it's a pretty easy buy right now. And he has a potential to – I'm not sure what his contract situation is, but if he balls out this year, he's got a good chance to have a place to play for a few years with a really good quarterback.
I think it's slightly team friendly because of the injury, but I'd have to.
I mean, that's fair. He's been on and off the field, so. But I think it's worth a shot for them to take.
Are you worried at all that, like, in that offense, he's essentially what, like, the fourth, fifth pass option at all? Or, I mean, obviously everything's like price dependent. Like, if you're only burning a third on him, then who the hell cares? But certainly seems like there's a cap on what he can do.
Yeah, I think the main thing that's going to hurt him will be not having a familiarity with Joe Burrow like Tyler Boyd does. But I kind of like him more than Tyler Boyd as a player. I think he's really athletic for a tight end. And I think he has the opportunity to step in as a third option. That might have to take a little while because I think he's got to get familiar with Joe Burrow. And Tyler Boyd's been playing with him since he came into the league. So I think that might be the only thing holding him back as opposed to ability.
1 year, $1.75 million, looks like only $400,000. K guaranteed, if I'm reading that right. So, yeah, we'll see.
That's a great deal for them.
Yeah. Zada, what do you think about Irv this year?
I'm not very enthusiastic on Irv just because it's really hard to get, like, I mean, that we saw it was difficult enough to make Tyler Boyd relevant in that offense last year. I mean, Irv Smith, I think, is a fine as far as fantasy and like acquiring him. He's fine. Like, he's cheap as hell right now. You can get him, and hopefully he works out, you know, as a back end tight end 12. You know, due to touchdown production, we know his athleticism. He's in an amazing offense right now, one of the best offenses in the league. So, I mean, the pieces fit, everything feels good. So, I mean, there's no harm in rostering him. And if it works out, you know, you can sell him or you can keep him and he'll be playing with, and if the Bengals like him, they'll just extend him and, you'll have this amazing tight end that you got for nothing and he'll be like on a 4-year contract with Joe Burrow on your dynasty team. I mean, it's just like, these are great bargain guys we're talking about right now that can really, really, you know, prop up your dynasty team and make it a beast in a couple of years, a year or two.
And if you're looking I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I should have clarified. I'm not drafting him and I don't advise drafting him as your tight end 1 or even tight end 2. You can get him as a tight end 3. Like, he's my third string tight end technically in a lot of leagues. And if anything, if you have better tight ends, if he has a few good games, you can sell him for a lot more than you paid for him as cheap as he's going. So I should have clarified on that.
Yeah, he's going like in the late 20s as far as tight ends go, even as far down as like the 30s. Like, so yeah, I mean, we're not talking anything expensive. And if you're a team who would like, you know, points this year, right? And you're sitting there with like a mid third, a late third, right? And you're saying, okay, well, I could, you know, take a dart throw on whoever, right? You know, Brenton Strange, right? Or I could, you know, kick this pick over to the Herb manager who may want the youth, you know, on their team, and then I use Herb. Herb plus Christian Kirk for Michael Pittman.
I'd take Herb Kirk. I think I'd go Herb Kirk. Honestly, it's almost like an even split.
It's close, but I lean Pittman a little bit. I've been pretty high on Pittman. It's kind of burned me a year or two, but I still think the ability's there, and he's still pretty young. So it's very close. That's a pretty good deal both ways, depending on your team need. So,
all right. So, interestingly enough, both of our experts tonight did their winners at first, and the next part of the show will all be losers. And speaking of losers, Jamie checking in the chat that he fell asleep and missed most of our show. We are, of course, mad that you did that, Jamie.
You can do it all again.
For that, Jamie, you're going to be penalized.
From the top.
You're going to be penalized 10% of your Roshan shares, which we all know would amount to 400 Roshan shares, just that 10% alone. All right, he's a big Roshan guy. Zara, you're next. Loser.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's Darnell Mooney. I think it's over. As long as he's on the Bears, there's just nothing really there for him. He's like a back-end wide receiver 3. Pass volume isn't going to be high this year. If it is, shame on me. I really don't believe it's going to be too high this year. We were just talking about Roshan Johnson. They're going to run the hell out of the ball with Deontay Foreman and Khalil Herbert. DJ Moore, I'm not even high on, and I just don't know what to do with Darnell Mooney as far as, I mean, outside of like a best ball play on some weeks in a matchup, you know, in a matchup friendly week. I just don't know what Darnell Mooney. He's it's a shame because he's still young. He's a good wide receiver, but it's just, you're not going to get value for him right now if you try to trade him. You might get a second round pick for him, a back end second, maybe. Probably not, though. And it's just a sad state of affairs for Darnell Mooney. He's a big time loser this year, and it's just not right. So,
Josh, Mooney's a guy that I've been getting a late first for, like, you know, not too long ago. You know, and you know, the hope that he would step up and be that wide receiver one again with targets on the Bears, and then here we are. You know, how the money have fallen. You know, he's basically ranked or going as far as ADP goes in the 50s and 60s among wide receivers. But Mooney's a free agent after this year, right? Is he somebody that you might try to sneaky buy, hoping that he has better luck on a new team?
Yeah, and I've really upped my startups. I did about 8 since the season ended, and I've drafted him in about 4. But all 4 of them, he's on my bench. I haven't drafted him as a starter. And I think at that point, I think the market's kind of caught up on it a little bit. I'm getting him late enough to where if he's 25 years old and he's shown that he has the ability to be not a wide receiver 1, I think he's a good wide receiver 2 in an offense. But he's shown that. He is a free agent. I just have this really bad feeling that the Bears are going to re-sign him. He's just kind of going to be stuck in that as their big play threat. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I'm buying him late. Not as a starter, but I mean, I'm not that optimistic about it. It's more one of those things where I'll just eat it. I still think I can throw him in for bye weeks, or if I get an injury, he'll be decent. But yeah, he's definitely fallen off the fantasy radar a little bit.
What about this? How about this? What if Matt Nagy calls Mooney next year and says, "Hey, Darnell, come to KC, dude. Come to KC. Come on now." Like, I mean, Darnell, better than Mecole Hardman. Better than, I think right now, I think any football team would prefer him to Sky Moore. I like Sky Moore. Sky Moore is a prospect, but I would not be acquiring any Sky Moore right now. You know, he's a different type of the receiver than Rashee Rice. I mean, I would love that. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. That's the upside play for me right there.
See, I have a contrarian view when it comes to KC. Like, I don't think that's a good landing spot, because then he just becomes one of 400 wide receivers not named Travis Kelce, who are wildly unpredictable week to week. Like,
but Kelsey's going to be like, he's 35 years old. Like, he's 34, 35 years. It's like, it's got to be over soon. Like, the sun is going down, big guy. Like, this
will be Noah Gray season in a few years.
What's that?
It'll be Noah Gray season in a few years.
There you go. You're right. I know. Like, he's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame while he's still in the Chiefs. Like, you got to retire. Like, come on.
I think I'm very anti-Matt Nagy, but the fact that Andy Reid's there and Patrick Mahomes there, if that happened, I would be happy. Because I think he's better than Juju. I think he's better than MVS. I think he's better than Sky Moore. So I think he'd be the best wide receiver they've seen in a little while.
What are the, what does that offense even look like without Travis Kelce, right? Like, can anybody, you know, like, what can somebody present that to me? What's that going to look like when they don't have this massive athletic tight end to hyper-focus on? Mm-hmm. Who gets open regardless of
pass to Pacheco or run it with Pacheco. That'll be great. Trust me.
I got a whole thing with Pacheco. I got so much hate the other day for a Pacheco take I had. Just holy moly. But
yeah, was it a positive or a negative take?
It was a negative take.
And good.
Oh, was it? Okay, good.
And the people who hated you should be ashamed of themselves.
They're so mad. They were so mad. I was like, I have to get off Twitter because I am kind of like mentally just exhausted from just reading all these comments. But man, my part of my process is not only looking at stats and not only looking at, you know, film, because I love doing both, but it's also like taking into consideration how teams approach roster construction regarding different positions, right? And they value different positions, and each team values a position differently. Like, we see the Chiefs, like, they value wide receivers completely differently because they have Kelce to rely on and they have Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, we saw in 2020 that they drafted CEH with a first round pick, and that blew up in their faces. That was a massive sunk cost, right? 2 or 3 years later, they go to the seventh round, they flip the script, they say, okay, no more running backs in the first 2, 3, 4 rounds. We're going to get Isaiah Pacheco in the seventh round in 2022, right? And Isaiah Pacheco, right? Like, he was a raw guy. He's a physical runner. He's not very elusive in the elusive metrics. He didn't work out too well. He had a high yards per carry of 4.9, but in my opinion, this is my very, very contrarian opinion. Yards per carry just does not tell the holistic picture of what a running back does and doesn't. There are other advanced metrics that tell what a running back can and can't do, right, that you see on the film, right? His 4.9 yards per carry were a result of really good run blocking and just very tough running, but there's other things he can't do yet. He's not a whole well-rounded running back, right?
And the defense is being spread out and playing, you know, two high safeties against KC, and that also helps, you know, lighten the box and soften things for the running game. He's not good at breaking tackles.
He just runs through people. That's basically it. Like, and he might run through one guy. That's all. He doesn't do anything special. And what I said was this, right? If you follow the logic of how the Chiefs are approaching the running back position, using a seventh round pick on Pacheco last year, this year they didn't spend any draft capital, right? And that's great. Good. But he's still a seventh round running back. And they brought in Denarius Prince, UDFA, who was just – there we go. Denarius Prince, UDFA, who is just as productive as Pacheco was in college and had a higher yards per carry. You know, I don't know his advanced metrics, but he's a very good running back. And he can threaten Pacheco. He can threaten Pacheco for the job. That's all I said. That's all I said, and people lost their shit. And I was like, guys, if you think a seventh-round draft capital is enough buffer from a UDFA who is just as good, if not better, than Pacheco already, then I don't know what to tell you. All I'm saying is use your imagination. Tell yourself a story so you're not blindsided when it does happen to you, so you can have at least stash Denarius Prince so when it does happen. Just that's all I'm saying. People are saying, well, Isaiah Pacheco can get better. I know he can get better. Of course he can get better. But, like, what's your process for knowing that he can get better besides telling yourself, yeah, he can get better? I'm just saying this is a possibility. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I have Denarius Prince ranked above guys who were drafted in my post-draft tiers here. So, like, he's certainly a guy who's on my radar. Pacheco's funny, right? Because I went to Rutgers, and I know that Rutgers football is horrible. And he kind of suffered from being at Rutgers and them having a horrible offensive line. Size-speed combo, blows up at the combine, and I'm saying Pacheco's a sneaky sleeper. And then, you know, he gets picked seventh round. I'm saying Pacheco's a sneaky sleeper. Now I'm saying people are way too over the moon about Pacheco. Like, you know, sell him and get value while you can. All that play style did for him was get him multiple surgeries, right? That we just found out. So and they, you know, they use 700 running backs anyway. So like I just yeah no I'm that yeah. So we have somebody who might be a neighbor of yours. Same guy who was talking about Denarius Prince. Daniel here says, says Galileo, it's a high school 10 minutes from my house.
Yeah, I know my cousin's from here. I got this from Aloha Exchange over there. So he took me to his, because my wife is from Oahu, and my cousin-in-law, he just took me to Kaleo, and we just drove around and got some food. And so I like Aloha Exchange a lot. That's cool. You're from there, Daniel. That's sick. Yeah, but he showed me around his old neighborhood and stuff like that. So yeah, I visited your neighborhood. Yeah, I visited your town. Yeah, I mean, not Oahu.
We were talking.
I'm not on Kauai. Sorry.
We were talking before the show about things that like don't get taught in history class, and like. When I teach students about, you know, the coup to overthrow the queen in Hawaii, that, you know, we essentially like, you know, stole Hawaii, like they're like blown away. You know, I'm like, well, how did you think, you know, a country that was here got a state thousands of miles into the ocean? I mean, come on.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That's it, right. So
military industrial complex.
All right. Josh, you have another bear who's a loser. Why don't we do him, and then we'll round out with some tight end losers and land the plane.
Yeah, so this is mostly a loser in a dynasty aspect more so than a redraft, more like 3-4 years down the line. It's Dante Foreman. He signed on a 1-year contract, so he's pretty expendable. I think they were taking a chance on him. But then they went and drafted Roschon Johnson, who, if Jamie's still listening, is way high on him. I was also very high on him. And I think Roschon Johnson's pass blocking ability and just overall running ability, I think he's going to eventually eat into Foreman's carries. I think it's going to be a committee regardless with Herbert being the 1A. And I think, like Z said earlier in the show, the 1B guys could move down to not even in the committee anymore and just kind of a handcuff for a committee back. And I think that could happen as the year goes on with Roschon and Dante Foreman. I do like him as a runner, but I think Roschon's pass blocking ability, and he's just not as good as Herbert. I think he's going to eventually get weeded out of that offense. And after this year, if he doesn't show to be a staple in this offense and have production, I'm not sure he's going to be like a Latavius Murray type player the rest of his career, where he just bounces around, gets like 6-7 carries on injuries. So I don't like his dynasty outlook as much as I do in redraft for 1 year. He might be fine, but.
Zada, thoughts on Foreman?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen the pinnacle of his career arc, and as far as production goes, I think it's kind of like all downhill from here. Like, he's the 1B, Khalil Herbert's the 1A, and like and Roschon's like the one B and a half. Like, it's just like they're all the ones to some degree.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's the upside is gone, and it's just not great.
Yeah, so. I'm not gonna call him quite the loser. Maybe that some other folks are. Listen, I know drafting Roschon isn't great news, right? But I think if I'm looking at the way the Bears are going to like use their running backs, right? I think Khalil Herbert's the main rusher. He's explosive and efficient, mm-hmm. and I think Foreman is a guy that rotates in. I also think they're shifting to like different types of running because the NFL is using more gap, so they're like sort of mixing the type of runners they have. And I think Roschon's going to mainly be, especially early on, a passing downs guy, pass blocking, receiving, third down kind of guy. So I think he's not really going to eat into Foreman and maybe as much as people think. But I guess it all depends like on where the cycle, you know, where in the cycle your team is and what you think you can get for Foreman or what you think you can buy him for. I saw on the Trade Finder, most recent trade with Foreman was Foreman plus Juwan Johnson for Tank Bigsby. What do we think of that?
I mean, I'll take Foreman and Juwan just because I like Juwan Johnson. 2 weeks ago, I talked about him being a buy in fantasy, and you know, I almost put him as a winner in the draft because he's going to beat the guy, and he showed really good potential last year. So I think I'll take the shot on Juwan and Foreman because, like you said, I don't know if Roschon will come in and be the 1B in his first year. I think he'll work his way into that. So Foreman could have some value this year, but I think in 3 or 4 years, I don't see him being much of anything.
Okay. Zada, what do you think about Foreman plus Juwan Johnson for Tank Bigsby?
I like Tank. I just don't think he's going to do anything really, you know, this year unless, you know, Etienne gets hurt. And also, like, Tank, I think he profiles more better as a receiving back than as a rusher. So maybe he might have some receiving value this year. But as far as, like, you know, fantasy point production goes, he's not going to outproduce Deontay Foreman one-to-one. So I think I'd rather take Foreman and Juwan Johnson for sure.
Yeah, I think I take the Foreman. And there's no bigger fan of Tank Bigsby probably than I am. And I think people are really overreacting to that landing spot. I think he's the more well-rounded back. I think he does. I think he's like a 1B and is solid from like day one. But at the same time, when you add Juwan Johnson to that, like an asset that I really like, I'm taking the Foreman and the Juwan side. All right, Zada, your last guy here, a loser in the tight end position.
I know, right? I didn't think so either, but then I spoke to Cecil. At Football Guy, Cecil Lamney, and he does he's a sideline reporter. He's a team reporter for the Broncos. He has a radio show that covers the Broncos. And I asked him about Greg Dulcich, and I reached out to him asking about Marvin Mims and Tim Patrick and the entire receiving corps. I'm like, what's up with Dulcich? And he thinks that Troutman with Sean Payton there. I mean, Sean Payton came, and he brought in Troutman almost instantaneously. Mm. And, you know, I'll just read you a quote from Cecil Lamney's article they wrote on Troutman. He goes, the dirty secret in the NFL is that it's all about fit, and Troutman fits what Payton wants to do, right? So Troutman was drafted. The Saints traded the 130, 169, 203, and 244. That's four picks to move up to the 105 and get Troutman. Sean Payton isn't done with Adam Troutman yet. He wants to Adam Troutman to succeed, and I think there's going to be some competition for Dulcich in training camp. You can get Adam Troutman right now. I think you should try. Adam Troutman was a small school tight end, very productive at his college in his final year. We were all high on him. You know, he's just like another. He was like one of those stories, kind of like Irv Smith, where, you know, there's like certain instance things that happen to these guys, like Irv Smith hurt his thumb or something like that, and like it just never worked out in training camp, and the timing was wrong, and Troutman suffered injuries. It just didn't work out. But there have been small windows where I've seen Troutman produce, and he looks promising. He has upside. So I'm just saying, like, Dulcich, it seems like there's a little bit of blemish to Dulcich with Sean Payton there, and Sean Payton being bringing in Troutman, and how Troutman profiles as a receiving tight end, and, you know, fits what Payton wants to do with that Eric Coryell style offense.
So this is more of a Troutman take than a Mims take or a coaching change take.
Nothing to do with Mims or the receivers. Yeah. It's more so what Payton's infatuation with Troutman, bringing Troutman in, and just staying, keep your ear to the ground. Yeah. Watch those Denver beat reports. If you have Dulcich, just pay close attention to that.
Yeah. So Josh, this one hurts. I love Dulcich. What do you think?
I have a question, and this is me not knowing as much about Troutman, because when I got into the dynasty landscape, he was already kind of like we're talking about Albert O and Brevin Jordan, kind of an afterthought. What does Troutman bring that Dulcich doesn't, that Sean Payton likes so much? And this is just me not knowing as much about Troutman.
So it's nothing. I don't know. I don't know where it is. I don't know.
It's just his preference.
It's familiarity.
Fairly similar players to me. So, like I said, I didn't know if I was missing something.
Troutman has a really good agility score. He has a really good wingspan. I mean, outside of that, he doesn't have high burst. He doesn't have high speed. He didn't run a incredibly fast 40 time or fast 40 time at all. I mean, just there's something that I didn't study Troutman. This is solely on Cecil. And Cecil, like, when he says something, especially about the Broncos, like, I just don't question Cecil. He's like right about stuff like 95% of the time. And I really think I put a lot of weight into what he says. He doesn't just spout off. He's not on Twitter bringing out hot takes. He talks when Cecil only speaks when he has to. So this is straight from him. And I'm channeling him, and I'm telling you guys, like, this is what he has said. He's written about it, and I'm just putting it out there in the world. I like Dulcich. I was very high on Dulcich. I've said like countless times this offseason that he is my breakout tight end. You know, he's my 2023 breakout tight end. But then Troutman came, and then Cecil spoke, and I'm just like, shit. Damn it. Why do you have to say that?
Cecil spoke, and we act. For those of you who don't know, like – catch the Football Guy's show called The Audible. with Cecil and Sigmund Bloom. It's a great show.
Yeah.
Josh, you were going to say something.
No, I was saying that's all I needed to know. I thought I was just missing something, but I mean, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I think Troutman's probably on benches in a lot of my dynasty leagues.
I remember
just trying to trade some late picks for him.
Dude, he's on waivers in a few leagues. I remember when he got drafted, folks were saying, listen, when Sean Payton spends a third round pick on a rookie tight end and trades up to get him, we pay attention. And I was like a Troutman like supporter. I was like, I was just hoping, and he would flash and he would have these games, you know. And then Payton left, and it was like he was like the forgotten guy. And then Payton becomes coach in Denver. Troutman like very vocally requests specifically a trade to Denver, and Denver says, okay, I'll take him because Payton wants him. So it's like one of those things where like I'm trying to tell people about Mims because, you know, Payton traded up and made him his hand-picked like first pick of his regime. I love like another reason to buy into the fact that Marvin Mims is my crush, but at the same time he also went ahead and like hand selected like give me Troutman. I want Troutman back. So this it can't be great for Dulcich, who I love, really good route participation. You know, who knows if Sutton got moved? Tim Patrick is meh. KJ Hamler is meh. You know, but now with Troutman, it's like, you know, like it hurts because I love Dulcich. He's like my tight end 9. But I'm gonna have to knock him down, I think, now. So Dulcich or Chig?
Chig. Absolutely. I'll take Chig.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Same. Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Z, you were gonna say something?
Yeah. I would just say I wouldn't knock him down just yet. And also, just for the record, I don't want Dulcich to not be the guy. I want it to be Dulcich, I have to let my bias go and adjust. You know, if I have to, I have to. Yeah. I'll let you guys know if I hear something. I don't know. If Cecil took the time to write, if Father Cecil took the time to write an article about Adam Troutman in 2023, then there must be something to it, right? Who writes about Adam Troutman in 2023? I don't know. He must have some strong convictions on him.
All right. And Josh, your last loser, which must be preceded by the fact that I find this a little ironic that you're calling him the loser when you're constantly throwing out bad takes about my love for Kincaid. So please go ahead.
I'm throwing out bad takes about Kincaid basically being the next Gabe Davis as a big wide receiver too. I think, all right. So yeah, my, my next loser is Dalton Knox. And I knew you were going to have a comment about this. That's one reason I put him on here. Cause I think it needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
So basically, this one's simple. It comes down to Kincaid just coming in already better at football, in my opinion, than Dawson Knox. I mean, he was on one of the better offenses, one of the most pass-heavy offenses, and he still failed to be a tight end one. He's basically touchdown or bust. And I think Kincaid holds a lot better upside, and especially in tight end premium. You know, I just don't like taking him at 109 over Zay Flowers. There's even up to 107, 108. That's my main issue, just on the assumption that he's going to be a big slot wide receiver. So that's really it. But I do really like him. I moved him up above Mayer, actually.
So, leaving aside how wrong Josh is about Dalton Kincaid and picking him at the 109 or 110, what about the fact that, like, Kincaid and Knox – listen, I'm not saying it's great for Knox, right? But they're different types of players or different types of tight ends, right? It's another mouth to feed, so to speak. But does it hurt, say, I don't know, Khalil Hips Don't Lie Shakir as a slot more than it hurts, you know, the inline tight end Knox?
It does, because the coaching staff, you know, Aaron Cromer over there, those guys love 12-man personnel, right? So, like, I expect Dawson Knox and Kincaid to be on the field a lot, with Dawson Knox playing in line. Kincaid played 30% of his snaps last year from the slot. So he is comfortable with the slot. I'm not worried about him playing in the slot. I'm fine with him being like a hybrid number two. I'm not expecting him to have a dynamic route tree. Gabe Davis is just going to be like some ancillary number two piece. It does hurt Khalil Shakir, but I do think that I do think Khalil Shakir will take slot duty, like actual slot duties. Like, he will be the slot wide receiver. I just think that with Kincaid there now, they're gonna go more towards a 12-man personnel controlled style of offense where they don't want Josh Allen running the ball and scrambling more. They want to run the ball a lot more. They want Kincaid in there. They want Dawson Knox on the field a lot more blocking. You know, and also like I think I look, hey, I took Kincaid today. I took Kincaid yesterday at 107 in a tight end premium league. I took him. Yeah, Josh. I took him at 107 in a tight end premium league. I took him over Addison. I took him over Zay Flowers. And I was just like, you know what? This was a great fit on a team that wants to run out a lot of tight ends. This guy was extremely productive in college. I'm not going to overthink it. He's very athletic. I mean, he didn't test athletically, but I mean, from the eye test, he looks athletic.
I don't think it hurts Shakir. This is why I think it hurts Knox, because they're both going to be on there. I mean, I just think he's going to get open a lot more than Knox, and I think Josh Allen's going to start to look for him more. And I think they do like to have a faster slot receiver, as you maybe not faster, but quicker, good at getting open, like they've had with Beasley and McKenzie. And I think they want to keep that aspect on there because Gabe Davis is only going to beat you deep. Stephon Diggs is, you know, he can do everything. But I think they like to have another, you know, actual slot guy on their team that just does that. And I think Shakir will do that.
Yeah. I have Shakir rostered. I'm enthusiastic about Shakir. I hope it works out for Shakir.
Yeah, I like him. Yeah. I like him more than I like Sky Moore. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He showed flashes last year.
Oh, yeah. He did. He did plenty. Yeah, it's going to be interesting with that offense. I mean, they still have James Cook back there. What's going to happen with James Cook? How are they going to utilize him? They've got weapons. But as far as, like, Kincaid, again, I try not to overthink things when it comes to certain players on really good offenses who have been very productive in college. And especially in tight end premium formats, I'm just going to push the button and let's go. We'll see what happens.
I can see it more in full point PP or tight end premium as opposed to half point tight end premium. I'd rather have Addison and Zay Flowers, but you know, if it's a point or more for the tight end premium, then yeah, I could see it then.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, what we're going to do, Josh, is tomorrow we're going to record a side episode where we debate each other about Kincaid, and yeah, it's going to be.
I'm off tomorrow, so.
All right. So yeah, Knox going pretty cheaply. He's, you know, a guy who was flirting with top 12 tight ends rankings a little while ago, you know, connected to Josh Allen. Josh Allen loves him. He scores TDs efficiency, et cetera, et cetera. Now he's in the 20s and early 30s as far as tight ends go. On May 10th, he was traded for the 306. So if you think, you know, there's some life to Knox on that offense still, despite Kincaid, you can certainly get him cheaply. So that just about does it for us with winners and losers. And, you know, we're the winners, of course, because Zada came down a few rungs on the ladder. And
Nope.
Came down to our podcast.
Yeah, don't even. You have no idea. What I've done.
I'm just busting chops. So please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the Going for Two Live podcast audio feed. If you're watching us here on YouTube, before you go, please make sure you subscribe to the channel, like the video, leave a comment, help us beat the algorithm. Remember our logo design contest. You can send me a 16:9 ratio JPEG in my DMs at @FFJunkie_. You can design our new show logo, which we will reveal the winner sometime in the summer. Zara, can't thank you enough for coming down. Why don't you tell the folks where they can find you and your work?
Yeah, I'm at Twitter at ZCantsFF, and you can find my dynasty rankings and articles at footballguys.com.
All right. And Josh, where can we find you and your work?
Yeah, you can find me dunking on the Mets and Mets fans on Twitter at Rotonaut, Rotonaut. You know, I recently just made enemies with a lot of Toronto Blue Jays fans too, so whatever. But yeah, you can find me there. I'm going to my rankings and future articles. Hopefully for DFS next season, we'll be on goingfor2.com.
Right on. You can find me on Twitter at @FFJunkie_goingfor2.com, rankings and articles. I'm going to be putting out a four-parter on Dynasty running back landscape at some point this summer. I also caught on with RPOfootball.com for a little bit. Going to be doing some videos and articles for them. I just did my first ever YouTube short, a very no-frills effort.
Congrats.
Thank you on why Tank Bigsby is slipping and you should scoop him up. And also, of course, Dynasty Fever, audio-only podcast episodes drop on Thursdays at Dynasty Fever Pod. And remember, Going for Two and our entire family of content, not just a wide-ranging website with DFS and Dynasty and Redraft and other sports and all that jazz, but also pretty much a live show every night for you here on the YouTubes. And when you go to goingfor2.com, in the bottom right, there's that little purple thing to the Discord. Click on that. Free Discord. Hella channels. This show has its own channel. Lots of great conversation. We argue about trades. Tom Tipple comes in there to fade running backs and cause Jeff some consternation. We just have a great time in there. Scott Fishbowl season's coming around, and we had a huge, you know, thing with mock drafts and a channel for each spot, you know, in the draft and all that. So that's going to be coming up too. So make sure that you check out all things Going for Two. Josh, you ready? That's a wrap. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And
go Irish.
And go Braves too. Why not? Right.
Always, yeah.
All right.